This is 5 o'clock shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network. I'm Robert Knight in New York. And in today's program, we take a deeper look at the issue of stop and frisk that has brought so many people of poverty, youth, and color into the records of the New York City Police Department. It is also a national agenda. We'll be speaking about that, and we'll be joined today live by G1 of the hip-hop duo Rebel Diaz. He's also a member of the RDACBX, an autonomous hip-hop community center in the South Bronx. All of that and more coming up on today's edition of 5 O'Clock Shadow, including a look at the plans across the country for UAVs, unmanned aerial vehicles, drones all across America, according to documents obtained by the Electronic Frontier Foundation. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow, and I'm Robert Knight in New York. Stay tuned. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network. I'm Robert Knight in New York, and there was a very special event held at the Drum Major Institute in New York City, where there was attendance by civic leaders of New York City, including members of the City Council and the Borough President of Manhattan, Scott Stringer, as well as the son of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Martin Luther King III. They assembled on the issue of the stop and frisk procedures in New York City. And our colleague, Linda Perry Barr, of the WBAI News Department, was present at the event. And we now hear some of the objections that were raised by the stop and frisk policy of Mayor Michael Bloomberg and Police Commissioner Raymond Kelly.
We need a broader conversation on police strategies that target the criminals and don't victimize our young people just because of the content of their skin. Because of their skin color. And the person who perhaps understands this best in this country and perhaps in the world, somebody who, like his father, has dedicated his life to social justice and civil rights. And the fact today that Martin Luther King III is here today to talk about the negative impact of racial profiling and stop and frisk, and to challenge all of us elected officials to see a different way to make sure that we do have constitutional police tactics, I think is very important. One last thought about this issue. If you are against this stop and frisk policy as presently constituted, it does not make you weak on crime. I want to make that very clear. It does not make you soft on crime. What it means is that you're smarter. It's my honor and privilege to introduce Martin Luther King III.
Good afternoon, and I want to first thank Borough President Stringer and members of the New York City Council, as well as other leaders from this community who have joined in this effort that I believe is so important, not just for New York City, this today focused on New York City, but unfortunately this level of behavior, while it is called stop and frisk here in New York and maybe some other areas of our nation, there are various components and forms of it in many cities across our nation. It really is a culture, just as we create a culture of violence in our nation, which I think is a bigger issue or one of the biggest issues that we must address. We must find a way to create a culture of nonviolence so that police officers and the community interact in an appropriate manner. I don't know what the notion is. What I do know is statistical data we've already heard, almost 700,000 stops, 87% of those people of color, so nearly 90% people of color, less than 10% of those stopped, resulting in a citation or anything major. While there has been some assistance, it would question as to whether or not this is an effective policy and what it is doing to demoralize a segment of the population. Because I believe my dad and his team and many in this city have fought over the years to ensure that everyone would be treated fair and justly. And a policy that seems to focus on a few ethnic groups, in my judgment, at least we need to evaluate or reevaluate it. I've said earlier today that I think in our society, and certainly with our police departments, and I certainly commend our women and men in blue who do, many of them, an outstanding job every day. We appreciate them. They have one of the toughest jobs in our nation. But there has to be a balance. And I think human relations, sensitivity, and diversity training is what perhaps is missing in our nation. So there may be some encouragement of that happening. But at the end of the day, I would raise this question on this particular policy. My father often said the ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in times of comfort and convenience, but where he stands in times of challenge and controversy. On some questions, cowardice ask is a position safe, expediency ask is a position politic, vanity ask is a position popular, but conscience ask is a position right. And so I end with that point. Is it right to initiate a stop and frisk policy that appears to be targeting a few segments of the population? And I think this dialogue needs to occur, because I'm sure this is not to criticize anyone, certainly not the mayor or the police commissioner, but to continue to dialogue to get a responsible way of addressing the issue of crime on New York streets and really throughout our nation. So I'm pleased to join these women and men, these leaders of New York, to continue to engage in this dialogue. I think it has already been stated by several council members, as well as by the borough president. One of those is community policing, more community policing. I said earlier, I think human relations, diversity, sensitivity training, but I also think that that is something society sort of has to embrace. I mean, it's a two-way street, and we need to have a real dialogue. And the final thing I would say is that nothing changes until people take issues very seriously and mobilize and organize. There's nothing more effective than old-fashioned mobilizing and organizing. Today we do it through Facebook, we do it through Twitter, we do it through just the internet in general. My father and his team had didn't even have a fax machine. But were able to organize and mobilize communities around the nation. So it only takes a few good women and men to bring about change. And I think the climate in this country is moving in a direction of change on the issue of whether it's stop and frisk in New York City or whether it's racial profiling around our nation. Thank you.
Thank you, Bert. Thank you.
I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up, live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners, will they be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream. My four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted, every hill and mountain shall be made lowly.
Two kings, Martin Luther King III and the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., speaking about judgment by content of character rather than color of skin, which is very much the issue in New York City, with Mayor Bloomberg and Police Commissioner Raymond Kelly's stop and frisk policy. To address that issue, we're very honored now to be joined live by G1 of the hip-hop duo Rebel Diaz. Welcome to 5 O'Clock Shadow.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
You are also a composer participant in a very important song on this issue, which we'll hear later in the program, called Stop, Stop, and Frisk. But you also work with RDACBX, Community Center in the South Bronx. Can you tell us what that center does?
Sure. Well, we call it the RDACBX, which stands for the Rebel Diaz Arts Collective here in the Bronx. We're an autonomous hip-hop community center. We basically, our main vision is to build community through the arts, in particular through hip-hop. You know, we know hip-hop was born in the Bronx, and really it's really about rescuing the essence of resistance within hip-hop culture, which very much has been co-opted by the rap music industry, but we feel that the culture is alive and well, and our space serves to fulfill that purpose of helping the culture grow and really rescuing the element of using the culture as a form of social commentary. We have media literacy training for young people where they learn how to create videos, music. We have a recording studio and performance space as well. It's an abandoned candy factory, actually, that we took over a few years ago and turned it into a 5,000-square-foot community space. But the song Stop, Stop, and Frisk is a project that came out of the space. Rebel Diaz is featured on it, as well as two other young members of our collective, Lus, who's singing on the chorus, and a young man by the name of V.I. Vitham, who's also on the song. But we did the song and the video, again, to address the Stop, Stop, and Frisk issue, to address the murder of Ramali Graham here in the Bronx at the hands of the NYPD, as well as the brutal beating of Jateek Reed here in the Bronx, which happened within a week of these two incidents. It happened within a week of each other. So the song is a project that came out of the work that we do here at the RDACBX.
Can you give us some idea of how much of a problem stop and frisk is in the Bronx?
Well, the stop and frisk policy is a continuation of, you know, the broken windows policing that Giuliani started in the 90s. So for us, it's nothing new to be constantly stopped here in the Bronx. We all know the statistics, the almost 700,000 stop and frisks that occurred throughout the city in 2011. The fact that almost 90% were black and Latino males. So it's something that we've been dealing with a lot. And as we see the increased process of gentrification occurring, in particular in the Mott Haven, Longwood, and Hunts Point sections of the Bronx, we're seeing an increasing aggressive tactics by the police to quote-unquote clean up the streets. And at the end of the day, what it does do is really is a continuation of the failed war on drugs policy here on a national level, where we have increased incarceration of young black and Latino males for nonviolent offenses.
Have you studied the statistics as slowly as they are released, however accurate they may or may not be from the police department? Do you have any idea on the scale of the stops and frisks and the way that they are executed with a discriminatory result?
Well, I mean, in particular, in regards to the Bronx, I mean, we beyond all statistics, again, it's a daily reality that we face living here in the Bronx. And you know, in the Bronx, the statistics are actually a little higher. There was a statistic that came out recently that says almost 92% of the stop and frisks are also young black Latino males in particular. So it's a disproportionate amount. When you have percentages that high, it's showing the reality of the fact that as a young black or Latino male walking down the streets of the Bronx, there's a high probability that you will get stopped.
Did you say 92%?
92%, correct.
Go ahead.
So that's a reality that we live with. Now, again, it's something that's happening throughout all the boroughs. But again, we view it as a precursor and as a parallel process to the process of gentrification that's occurring here in the Bronx. Mayor Bloomberg, when he decided to exercise his tyrant tendencies and decided to change the rules to be able to run for a third term, one of the things that he said is that he had a lot of unfinished business in the South Bronx. The development a couple of years ago, the new Yankee Stadium provided an excuse to rezone a large section of the South Bronx that was formerly manufacturing spaces, industrial spaces. We know that those companies and jobs that used to provide employment are no longer here in the Bronx. There are many other urban areas throughout the country that have gone overseas. So what we have is large spaces, large areas of land that a lot of people see huge dollar signs potential for that to grow. So we see that as hand-in-hand with the increased aggressive police tactics that are occurring here in the Bronx, not only with the stop and frisk, but also with a continued attack on immigrant street vendors and the like.
Can you tell us what happens to someone who is stopped and frisked? Is that a way of tagging and bagging everybody of a certain demographic, that is young Black and Latino males predominantly? Does this affect their careers, their academic hopes, and other parts of their future lives by being snared in this net?
Well, I mean, I think we need to put it in the context of the larger increase in surveillance police state that's happening here in the United States. We see attacks on the Occupy movements that occurred in the fall of last year. We saw it in the spying on Muslim groups here in New York City and in New Jersey at the hands of the NYP in collaboration with the CIA and the FBI. And so if we put it in that context, this idea of stop and frisk, and even when you're not arrested, if they don't find anything on you, any contraband or anything illegal, your name is taken, they take the information down. So for us, it's part of a greater context of control and information gathering that's happening on a national scale beyond just the local. So when you put it in that context, when you put it in the context, again, of the war on drugs and different policies that are giving, you know, minimum sentencing, maximum sentencing for small drug offenses. And what you have is, again, is even when young people, for example, even with the case of Romarley Graham, you know, it turns out that the police were looking for him because they thought he maybe had a small amount of marijuana on him, and he ended up dead in the home of his grandmother, shot by the NYPD in front of his little brother and his grandmother in his grandmother's bathroom. Shot and killed, and to this day we have no justice. So for us, it's definitely something that is affecting the development of young people here in the Bronx. And the work that we're doing at the RDACBX, at our community space, is really to counter that. It's to create a safe space for young people to gather at, where they are safe from the police terrorism in the streets and safe also from the violence that also occurs within our community, right, at a local level, at a community level. So we do feel that it's definitely negatively impacting young people here in the Bronx and affecting their future prospects for employment and education.
With the work that you do at the center and your contact in the performance industry and community relations, what are young people and their families doing to further the reversal of this policy?
Well, you know, I mean, for us, we feel that young people don't need to be told that there's levels of oppression and police terrorism occurring in our neighborhoods. I think that young people are very conscious of it. What we try to do is create a level of consciousness where young people can begin to understand that it's part of a larger picture. Again, like some of the things I've been talking about earlier, it's part of a larger context of the increased police state that's occurring here in the United States. We saw the passage of the NDAA a couple of months ago by President Obama, as well as other attempts to be able to control the internet and things like that, with proposals to be able to police the internet and control the most democratic medium that we have available to us at the moment. So what we do, again, is the idea that through culture, through media literacy training, is to be able to understand that these daily incidents that we encounter with the police and the aggressive tactics at the hands of the NYPD are part of a larger picture that is negatively affecting our community. Again, making the link with gentrification, the rhetoric that they say of, you know, creating a better Bronx, but at the end of the day, you know, they can build parks and better the roads, but if its places become too expensive for us to live in, then how can we enjoy those betterments in our neighborhood?
Our live guest is G1 of Rebel Diaz, and also RDACBX, the Hip Hop Community Center in the South Bronx. And G1, since the work that's being done involves intelligence, art, resistance, and community building, have you been in touch with other groups like yours around the city where they're like in Brooklyn and Queens and Manhattan?
Absolutely. You know, we see ourselves as part of a larger political movement. We feel that our contributions are centered around culture, art, media, but we definitely build with other organizations that are doing day-to-day work with the community, that are door-knocking, that are passing out flyers, that are organizing vigils for Romali Graham. There's going to be vigils actually every Thursday from 5 to 7 p.m. Actually, there's probably a vigil actually going on right about now. Actually, sorry, tomorrow around this time for Romali Graham. And again, so for example, organizations like Take Back the Bronx, which really was inspired by the Occupy movements of last fall, different coalitions that have come together to address these issues that are affecting us on a local level and making the larger link to some of the concerns that the Occupy movement on a national level were raising in the fall, as well as, for example, organizations doing Cop Watch. There's organizations doing Cop Watch in Harlem. There's the Justice Committee doing Cop Watch in Uptown, Washington Heights, and the Bronx. So for us, we try to serve as a cultural and media component to the day-to-day organizing that these other organizations have been doing for a long time. You know, before any talk of Occupy or this and that, these are organizations that have these are struggles that are not new to our community. Again, we have to put the stop and frisk policy in the context of a larger policing strategy that began with Giuliani in the 90s, and that these type of aggressive police tactics. And these policies have been spread throughout the nation and have become a model for policing in other parts of the world as well. So for us, you know, we definitely build with other organizations in the area, in Uptown and also in Brooklyn, that are organizing around these issues. And we feel, you know, we had one of the members of our collective in collaboration with The Point and in collaboration with other organizations, the YMPJ here in the Bronx, we did a mural, a series of Know Your Rights murals done throughout the area where, you know, we depict the idea of being able to police the police through Cop Watch, through filming incidents, and knowing the power of media to be able to counter aggressive police tactics. And so our work is centered around that and also building with these other organizations, again, that are doing this important work.
G1, for those who want to be part of that, how do they get in touch with RDACBX?
Well, we have a website. It's www.rdacbx.org, where we, you know, post information in regards to the particular work that we do in regards to events and programming, as well as work with other organizations. There's, you know, Take Back the Bronx, which is occupythebronx.org. Also has information, OccupyTheHood.org also has information in regards to the vigils that are being held on a weekly basis for Romali Graham. Again, we've had a lot of media coverage, you know, of the Trayvon Martin incident on a national level, which is important in and of itself. But beyond that, on a local level, we feel that this issue of justice for Romali Graham has really been swept under the rug. And we feel that it's important to highlight that. So we're definitely very involved in that. And if you go to those websites, you'll definitely get more information in regards to upcoming events addressing that issue.
Final question for you, G1 of Rebel Diaz. It is about the song, of course, Stop, Stop and Frisk, that you and your colleagues put together on this very issue. It's very informative, very powerful. And can you take us backstage to the magic of creating this in the studios and the conception of it? How did you guys do it?
Well, you know, actually, I personally, you know, I have family in Chicago, and I was tending to a family emergency in Chicago when the initial, the beating of Jatique Reed occurred, and then I was still in Chicago when the murder of Romali Graham occurred here in the Bronx, and I was actually, you know, halfway across the country seeing all my comrades here from the RDACBX and other organizations here in the Bronx on the streets protesting for justice for Romali Graham and for Jatique Reed, and seeing that, you know, these incidents, as tragic as they were, also served as a wake-up to a lot of the, you know, younger people here in the Bronx, and it served to further politicize them and raise awareness about this issue of police terrorism. So when that occurred, you know, I started making some music, and I sent it over to the guys over here. They added their vocals, sent them back, And, you know, I put together the video and song right then and there. And it was just, it worked out well because while I was in Chicago for those days, the other people featured on the song, Rod Stars of Rebel Diaz, and other members of our collective, Lust and Vithem, who are two younger folks from our collective that have really come up in this process of consciousness building through art. And it really came together nicely in the sense that they were heavily involved in the protests and helping to organize the community around these issues. And so that inspiration from their work, I was inspired by seeing them doing the work that they were doing here in the Bronx. And they were inspired in turn by that whole process of seeing a community rise up and demand justice for it. And that really translated into those lyrics, into the passion that's in that song, which is really calling for, again, for justice for Jatique Reed and for Romali Graham, as well as a call to end this racist stop and frisk policy. And looking also at the larger picture of how mass incarceration in this country has really become the new Jim Crow.
So you produced it asynchronously, not in one studio session, but using the most modern techniques of transmission
yes,
and mixing,
indeed,
huh?
You know, and it's, again, a testament to the power of using the internet and the new technologies to be able to get work done and still being able to produce, you know, relevant media and art. And again, it worked out in the sense that we have the resources here at the Art Deck BX in the Bronx here, where we have a recording studio in the space, and the young people were able to record their verses and send them over, and we got it done and added some important visuals that included it, because the song in and of itself is a great song, but the video that goes along with it also includes important information and statistics regarding stop and frisk, and talking about the almost 700,000 stop and frisk that occurred in 2001, how they disproportionately affect Black and Latino males, and how a lot of these stop and frisks don't result in arrests at all. And so for us, it was important to not only put this music out, you know, but also have it contain relevant, important, factual information for young people to be able to get a beginning and take a look at that and say, hey, maybe I should look more into this and see what this is all about. So for us, it's really about creating entertainment, but with a level of education and political education built in that allows for consciousness building in our young people here in the community.
This is 5 O'Clock Shadow, originating at WBAI on the Pacifica Radio Network. I'm Robert Knight in New York, and that's G1 of Rebel Diaz. And I hope that you and your friends and colleagues are listening to 99.5 FM or streaming at WBAI.org, because we're going to hear that song now. And I thank you so much for the wide range of work that you are doing and the inspiration you're bringing to so many. And this presentation of your song called Stop, Stop and Frisk is a little bit different. We can call it a shadow mix because we've added a little something to it. So it's Stop, Stop and Frisk by RDACBX, featuring Rebel Diaz, Vithem, and Lus. Also featuring Police Commissioner Raymond Kelly. I hope you enjoy it, G1.
Cool, thanks. Looking forward to hearing the remix. Thanks, guys.
All right, here it comes.
Peace.
Is it possible to say how many stop and frisks were conducted this year and how integral that was to the crime stats?
We give that number on a quarterly basis to the city council. I believe it's called. It won't be finalized. It takes us about a month to tabulate the final number. So I can't give you the 2001 number.
Oh, and I'm sorry. And just as a follow-up, can you say how important it was to fighting or reducing crime?
I think if you look at all of our strategies, you look at the Operation Impact, you look at the real-time crime cycle, look at the use of technology, look at the policy of engagement, it's all work. You don't have a reduction of crime when you have a 6,000 fewer police officers unless you're proactive and you look across the board at our strategies and you look at the results.
Oh, mama, I'm in fear for my life from the law, the law.
Stop and frisk. Stop and frisk. Stop and frisk. The police, yeah, I said it. Let them come in. Larry Davis style, bust them. Eye for an eye, leave everyone blind. But I'm tired.
not a losing mind. Another child dies, another child beat by the cop who walked the beat, but will rest so he can meet his quota for the week. These days, can't walk the streets without the jakes. When I run up and search you for your pockets and murder you, that's criminal. The system accused you with the same crimes they threw to you and called it excusable. Sean Bell's killers acquitted. Troy Davis, Lindstedt, Mumia still in prison. I don't get it. In the land of the free, why you think young Curry guns carry guns? We've been taught violence since day one. So if they want peace in the streets, they can start with justice for your team and the family of Ramon.
Oh, mama, I'm in fear for my life from the
Yo, murder is murder and assault's assault. Time to shut the city down, bring business to a halt. Illegal searches, you ain't never had a warrant. The streets is on fire, don't consider this a warning. This a promise from the land full of promise. But APA give us office after office to assault us. 13 years after Amadou, they still killing us. What you gon' do? Where you gon' run to when they run in your house? And they pull the guns out, one shot take you out. The biggest gang is the NYPD, and Mayor Bloomberg is they dirty attack-ish. They stop you, frisk you, the jails with kids. Let's keep it 100, man, we tired of this. They guilty of murder, guilty of assault. Get a special prosecutor, man, prosecute them all.
Oh, mama, I'm in fear for my life from the law.
I seen a kid get beat riding a kickstand. Kicked him with hatred, called him a thief cause his skin's brown. Are we less human? We niggas are spits now. Has the mayor been stopped the frisk down in his town? They beat you there and locked you up in the crease bell. Many stories about abuse, power the streets tell. Bullets rain hell on black males from 2012. It's target practice preparing for another Sean Bell. Ray Kelly be calling up the officers to tell them officers.
I search niggas to bring quarters in.
8 times I've been stopped for no reason. An unarmed kid was murdered, burned all the priests. The badge is worth more than the life of a human being. No justice, it's just us fighting for our freedom. Instead we're asked for IDs, giving severe beatings. I pray for the better, but the police killed Jesus.
Oh mama, I'm in fear for my life from the law.
Stop and frisk, yeah.
Oh mama, I'm in fear for my life from the law.
Stop and frisk.
And we won't stop.
So we get justice.
And we gon' stop.
Stop and frisk.
And we won't stop.
So we get justice.
And we gon' stop.
Stop and frisk.
And we won't stop.
So we get justice.
And we gon' stop.
Stop and frisk.
And we won't stop.
So we get justice.
The shadow mix of Stop, Stop and Frisk, performed by RDACBX, featuring Rebel Diaz, Vithem, and Luss. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI. I'm Robert Knight in New York, and we are now joined live by Jennifer Lynch, a staff attorney with the Electronic Frontier Foundation, which has another piece of the story about surveillance and data cataloging and warehousing of virtually everyone in the United States today. And Jennifer, we are very much impressed by the work that EFF has just done in ascertaining some part of the astonishing nationwide plans for unmanned aerial vehicles, drones, to be flying pretty much all over the United States. What have you learned?
Well, first let me say thank you for having me on your show. It's great to be on the show. And we've learned a lot of interesting information. So we sent a Freedom of Information Act to the Federal Aviation Administration last spring because the FAA is the only agency that issues authorizations to fly a drone in the United States. So if you want to fly a drone and you are a law enforcement agency or a city or a university or a branch of the federal government, you have to ask for authorization from the FAA. And the FAA had released some general numbers on the number of authorizations that it had issued, but nothing specific. So we filed suit in January, and the FAA released two lists of information that they say include all of the entities that they have authorized to fly drones domestically. And the lists include agencies like the military and Customs and Border Protection and the FBI. And those are not so surprising. But what was a little bit more surprising were the small towns and police departments across the country that have received authorizations to fly drones.
What kind of activities would these police departments and other agencies be using them for?
You know, I think there are a lot of different uses for drones. So for the police departments, they could be used for various types of surveillance. They could also be used to patrol borders for Customs and Border Protection. Some of the universities and research institutions might be using drones for not so nefarious purposes. They could be using them to monitor environmental problems, so for example, soil erosion in a given area.
How successful has the FOI suit been, and is the information coming forward with sufficient speed and detail?
Well, I'm a little disappointed in how slowly the FAA has been to respond to our FOIA request. So, we filed a lawsuit in January. And the FAA, I think that they are really trying to release this information, and they're trying to be transparent as an agency. However, because there are so many different entities involved in providing the information, so these certificates of authorization come from applications that each entity submits to the FAA. So whether it's the FBI or it's the Miami-Dade Police Department, they submit an application to the FAA, and the FAA either grants the authorization or denies it. And so each of those applications has a lot of information on it, and at this point the FAA says that's a lot of information to deal with, and we're just taking a long time to process it. So I think it has been a little slow in getting this information, but it's certainly good to see the list of entities that have authorizations to fly drones, because we haven't had that information before. And now what I'm seeing is that a lot of local reporters and local activists are going to those entities around the country and saying, okay, we now know you have an authorization to fly a drone, so what are you doing with your drone, and what kind of drone do you have, and tell us more about the program. And that's the real reason that EFF filed the FOIA request in the first place, was just to be able to go to those different entities and say, give us some more information.
We know that the United States government, the National Security Agency, and the National Reconnaissance Organization have long been using low-orbit satellites such as the Keyhole and others for observation of amazing acuity, but since they are orbital, they have a dotted line of access to any given point on the Earth. Do you imagine that these kinds of devices could be used, for instance, in the suppression of the growth of marijuana, or of transit and travel, or of crowds assembling for a protest, and this sort of thing that might impinge on issues of law enforcement?
I think that there is certainly a possibility of that, especially for marijuana growing. I mean, that's, federal law enforcement have been using manned aircraft to track the growth of marijuana across the country for many, many years now, and there's been a lot of case law on that and on how that is actually a very, according to the courts, that's a legal use of law enforcement powers. Law enforcement does not need a warrant to fly over your backyard and see if you're growing marijuana.
So they can do thermal imaging, for instance, for the lamps that might be used to grow.
Well, actually, the thermal imaging question, if you're talking about thermal imaging to look inside your house, that's a different issue. So there was a Supreme Court case in 2001 where the court said that using thermal imaging to see inside a home is unconstitutional if it's done without a warrant. So law enforcement does need to get a warrant to use thermal imaging to see inside your home.
Jennifer Lynch, Do we have any idea what hardware, what equipment, and what form it takes? Are they all intended to be like the predators and the reapers that are able to be armed? Or is there a range of sizes and of mission duration vehicles?
Yeah, there's definitely a range of sizes in the drones. So the federal government is more likely to be flying the larger drones. We know, for example, that Customs and Border Protection has 9 Predator drones. These are unarmed Predators they're using for surveillance of the borders and for various other missions. But the state and local police departments generally are flying much smaller drones. So these are drones that may have a wingspan of no more than 28 inches that you could launch by hand or by a slingshot or off the back of a car. Some of them look like fat helicopters, so they can fly straight up or down like a helicopter would. And they're all very different from each other, and they're also different in what kind of they call it a payload you can put on the drone itself. So you could mount a camera on them. That camera could be video. That camera could have thermal imaging or infrared technology. You can also put tools on there to intercept communications like phone calls or text messages. And you know, a lot of these drones were designed originally for the military, and so they are capable of having weapons on them.
So they could siphon off the repeaters for the cell phone system across the country and get instant messages that are not otherwise recorded by the National Security Agency then?
I mean, the drones themselves are really just a vehicle for all of the various types of surveillance capabilities that already exist. So anything that's out there that's small enough to be put onto a drone could potentially be put onto a drone if it's able to either have a hard drive that it can record information on or to broadcast information back to whatever law enforcement is using it.
Jennifer Lynch, you must have gone through quite technical education for this noble mission of bringing forward the information about what is being done with drones. And here's a technical question that occurs to me, since you are petitioning the FAA and related agencies for this information. In these crowded skies of America today, I am flashed with an image of the movie Blade Runner. And of the movie The Fifth Element, with vertical taxi cabs and fast swooshing vehicles that move in what seem like a chaotic way, with the possibility of miscoordination and crashes and vectors intersecting. And do you know how well the qualification, training, safety, avoidance, and issues that may not be obvious for an unpersoned vehicle, how that could impinge on existing air traffic in the country?
Well, so here I do think that we are in good hands with the FAA. This is why the FAA issues the authorizations to fly unmanned aircraft in the United States, because their mandate is to protect the safety of the national airspace. So they are reviewing applications to make sure that the entity that wants to fly a drone can do so safely, and they're issuing restrictions to ensure that the drones are being flown safely. So, for example, the certificates of authorization we've seen so far that have been issued to police departments have required the police departments to only fly the drones in line of sight of a pilot. So there has to be a pilot actually on the ground watching the drone. And then there's a secondary observer who also needs to maintain a visual line of sight with the drone. And then there have been some other restrictions. So, for example, I think the Miami-Dade Police Department was required to only fly their drone under 300 feet and outside of any urban areas. They were also not allowed to fly it over buildings or public beaches. So I think that does a lot to protect the safety of people who might be walking underneath a drone, for example. Now, it sort of remains to be seen how the FAA is going to be able to deal with this, as Congress has mandated an expansion of the drone program domestically. So Congress has said to the FAA, we need to allow more state and local law enforcement offices to operate drones. And the FAA is really going to have to deal with that and make sure that these things are flown safely.
Could we see a day when snooper choppers are flying in the concrete canyons of New York City or Los Angeles, Chicago?
I think most people are proposing that that day is not that far off.
Mm. Jennifer Lynch, this is an astonishing revelation, and I'm so glad that you could be with us to share that today. And I know for a long period of time that the Electronic Frontier Foundation has been on the very front lines of protecting freedoms and informing people about their danger. And take a moment for a final word to tell people how to know and support your work and what we should keep our eyes peeled for in the sky or elsewhere.
Sure. Well, I would encourage all of your listeners to go visit our website at www.eff.org. And it has information on all of the different things we're involved in these days. Join, please.
Well, Jennifer Lynch, good luck and good work, and we'll stay in touch as this story develops. I really appreciate your being with us today.
Great. Well, thank you for having me.
This is 5 O'Clock Shadow. I'm Robert Knight in New York, and today's program was engineered by Michael G. Haskins and produced by Thiago Brozo. And we leave you with this thought as America becomes even more scrutinized and records become more permanent and more people are rounded up to be put in that great big database. And it may be what some people think is an Arab Spring, but as Gil Scott-Heron says, it's also winter in America.
Thank you very much. For the last few years, we have been doing a song that concerns the fact that the seasons have been affected recently. Don't seem to have spring like you used to, or summer or fall. It has been a season collectively of frozen aspirations and frozen hopes. We'd like to do a song for you about the season that we're trying to get over. It's called Winter in America. Circling beneath the dark clouds, looking for the rain. Yes, they've been looking for the rain. Just like the city, the stagger on the coastline, living in a nation that just can't take much more. Like the forest they buried beneath the highway, never had a chance to grow. Well, they never had a chance to grow. And now it's winter. Seems like winter in America. Time when all of the hills done been killed and been betrayed. Yeah, even though it's something wrong, everybody ought to know winter. It seems like winter in America. Nobody knows what to say. Brother, sing me so. Winter in America. The Constitution was a noble piece of paper. And with free society, well, they struggled, but they died in vain. And now, democracy is ragtime on the corner, unemployed and hoping that it rains. Yes, it's been a hoping for some rain, but it just don't look like rain. I've seen the robin.
thirsty barren treetops. The watching last ditch race ahead, marching across the floor. And like these sighs that melted in our dreams and never had a chance to blow. Well, I never had a chance to grow. If somebody won't know, tell them it's a winter. Nothing grows in winter in America. It's a time when all of the human done been kicked, or they've been betrayed. Say, people know it's something wrong here, and it feels like a winter. It seems like winter in America. Yes, well, the truth is this, nobody fighting because, well, nobody knows what to say. My sisters say the babies. Winter in America. It's winter. It's cold. It's winter in America. Yes, it's the time when all of the healers, fellas who could help us, done made a kill. They put them in jail. Hey, people know it's something wrong. Everybody ought to know. Winter in America. Yes, well, truth is there ain't nobody fighting because, well, nobody knows what to say. Yes, well, the truth is nobody fighting because.